This is the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast with your hosts, Scott Walker and Jamie Davis, episode 205. I'm one of your hosts, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy and Sci-Fi Reads, and I am here with my co-host, urban and cozy fantasy author, Scott Walker. Scott, we've been having a lot of fun, and there's been a little bit of a break in our podcast releases recently, but we're back in the saddle again with a great episode today. And also, I'm excited to say you have a book coming out next week.
I do. April 18th, I'm not sure when this episode will drop, but April 18th, Rituals and Recipes, which is book three in my cozy urban fantasy series, will be live. It should be available for pre-order right now when you're listening to this. But I'm very excited to get that out and have the next chapter, pardon the pun, unfolding with Melina Morgan and her journey in Manhattan. So very excited about that. And book four the plotting has already begun for book four. So yeah, exactly. Look for that later on this year. Meanwhile, I'm currently writing two books for Cozy Vale. So I'm doing a travelogue, which I hope will be out in May, maybe later this month. I don't know. We'll see. And then I'm doing my own first novel in my first series in Cozy Vale, just my own standalone stories. Working on that as well. That will probably drop sometime in May or June. And regardless of that, we've got a summer anthology for Cozy Vales that will be wide and perma-free, available to download. That should go, we're targeting mid-June. So if you liked winter tales from Cozy Vales, get ready for summer tales from Cozy Vales. Oh, wow.
That's I'm already looking forward to that. Winter Tales from Cozy Vales was so much fun. And just gave us a great introduction to the world. So I can't wait to see Summer Tales from Cozy Vales because it's a different vibe, right? Everybody's outside.
Very much so. I mean, we're changing seasons and we're changing kind of the theme. You know, there was a holiday theme for Winter Tales. Summer's going to be more about new beginnings and changing travel, changing places, that type of a thing. So it's a slightly different take on that. The travel log that I'm working on right now that I'm hoping that'll be out. Well, that'll definitely be out before the Summer Tales anthology. The travel log I'm working on is going to be a great primer, whether you've read Winter Tales or not. And if you want to jump into the world and know a little bit more about it in a way that goes deeper and broader than the glimpses of the world that you see through the short stories, you're definitely going to want to pay attention to the travelogue. It's called Intara's Guide to Cozy Vales, and it follows her first journey through the Vales. She's from another land, and she was sent by her king to check out this crazy queendom called Cozy Vales and figure out what's going on over there. So our readers get to go through see the world through her eyes, and she travels through, and she's probably going to hit about a dozen or so locations in the queendom. So it's going to be fun and a great primer that will also be free and perma wide. So you'll be able to download that for free as well. So a couple more titles coming down the pike. What have you been up to? I say that having known exactly what you've been up to. So, but what have you been up to, my friend?
Well, in the period since we last dropped the podcast, I've been to Scotland and back, went on a trip with my wife, book research trip, and really just had some ideas for a book in my Extreme Medical Services series where my main character, supernatural paramedic Dean Flynn, would go to Scotland to help them set up their own Extreme Medical Services unit. And so I have to go to Scotland to figure out how that's going to work. And we went on a trip for a week, and it was a great fun. We got to Loch Ness. And we got to see lots of castles. We went to St. Andrews and saw the university there. And lots of fun, just lore and talking to people. And I'm excited to share all of that. And, of course, a lot of people have asked me, did we see Nessie? And you'll just have to wait and see if Nessie shows up, because I might have some insight into Nessie for my next book. So all that came from our trip to Scotland. It was a lot of fun and much needed getaway as well.
And I can only imagine how much imaginary fuel you came back with as well. Because I spent a time, short trip back in 2018, 2019 in Ireland and came back. I'm going to write a book about the deity Brigid or Brigid, however you prefer to pronounce it. I'm going to write it at some point, but I came back completely with this idea for a novel in my head. And I can only imagine what you came back with. I can't wait to read your Scotland installment in your EMS
Well,
series.
it's something we in the United States don't really get a concept for until you see it, is how old things are in other parts of the world that have been inhabited, at least on a grander scale than, with large cities and huge structures and things like that. You don't see that here in the middle Mid-Atlantic region of the United States so much. Certainly other areas of the Americas, the pyramids and stuff in Mexico and the Mayan ruins and things like that date back thousands of years. But, we don't have that kind of thing. And so you go to Scotland and you're walking through a castle that's been there for 1,100 years, and you feel the age there. And it's such an epic. We were right on the coast of the North Sea in the northern part of Scotland. So waves crashing on the shore on the rocks and just epic scenes that I can't wait to just play with.
That's awesome, man. I can't wait to read these. I can't wait to read these. Get cracking, man. Get
I'm working on
writing.
it. That's actually one of the things, is it's really rearranged my writing schedule for the year. I think I'm gonna start writing that book sooner than I had originally planned when we went to the trip. So I may start on that book late spring, push off something else in its place. So we'll see, and I'll have more about that. So if you want to know more about what I'm writing when, this is definitely the place to find out, because I'll be talking about it here first, probably.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Well, Scott, why don't we get into this week's episode? I'm really excited. Our guests this week are Max and Eli Moyer. Max Moyer is an epic fantasy author living just outside Washington, D.C. Max's debut novel, Zodak, The Last Shielder, is available on Amazon, and there's a prequel novella, Throneborn. Actually, Zodak, The Last Shielder will be out as of the release of this episode, so you can get that. Max and his brother Eli grew up playing an invented role-playing game that based in a fantasy world that they created using only pencils and pads of paper. So not even the Dungeons and Dragons dice kind of thing, but they called it Walking the Hallway, which they felt like that was how all these adventures always started, was walking down a dark hallway. So over the years, they have built out the world of Mind's Eye and continue to explore stories of heroics, great evil, and triumph against that fantastical backdrop. And the fantasy world is just a setting, and it's a sandbox for creating and building great stories about struggle, pain, conquest, and wonder. Great stories are what Max is seeking to create.
Awesome. Cannot wait to jump into this. Let's do it.
Max and Eli, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. We're Scott and Jamie, as you know. And why don't you take turns? We'll start with Max, and then Eli, introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having us. My name is Max Moyer. I'm a epic fantasy author. I've got a debut novel coming out in a couple of weeks, and just really happy to be here.
And I'm Eli. I'm Max's little brother, and I'm kind of a wingman supporter, co-creator of the world that Max is writing in right now, and hopefully one of his biggest fans.
Hopefully. Well, I think you know that's true.
There we go.
Absolutely.
And we should note that Eli's zooming in from Georgia, not the state in the U.S., but the country in Europe as well.
Yeah, don't get him confused, because you'll end up in really different places.
So let's talk a little bit with Max first, and then Eli can chime in too. Tell us a little bit about how this world that you built together come about. It seems like you've been working on this for a while.
To say the least. Eli and I started creating the world over 30 years ago. And it all started one fateful day when I was invited to a friend's house in middle school, and his older brother showed us this game called Dungeons and Dragons. And I've heard all kinds of dice and books, and it was really cool. And I got home and I said to Eli, I said, you got to see this. This is this great game. Now, there's some details about dice and books and stuff, but here's how it works. One person is walking down a hall. The other person tells them what happens. And then you like fight a lot of bad guys and stuff. That became a pastime of ours that we attributed a very original name to, walking down a hall, because you always started walking down the hall. Well, we made it more creative, I guess, as we got older. But Eli was often the narrator. I was often the subject, and we had pads and pens, and that was it. So that's how we started with the world building, was through this game, walking down a hall, long road trips, vacations. You know, it was a way for us to connect as kids and exercise some creativity.
And Little Brother's Revenge, if I could be narrator and control his destiny, well, that's a win for me.
Sure. And not the first time we've heard about D&D being a gateway into fiction for several authors. I'm not completely immune to that. I probably would say Star Wars was the impetus for me wanting to build worlds and create and tell stories. But D&D came soon after that, and it definitely changed how I looked at stories and how much I wanted to tell stories. So would you say that that was your original inspiration for writing, or does it predate even that?
So the story continues as Eli and I got a little older, and then in college, we kind of revisited this world we had played in, but not really done much to create in any thoughtful way. And we thought this would be great if we could create a video game. We've got some great material here. So we actually spent some time on the world and put together a video game proposal, which we put in the mail, shipped off to a bunch of video game developers. As you might expect, we were shocked at the time. We didn't hear much back from the likes of EA and some other of the small names out there. So that's how we kind of got back together and started world building in the way that some people think of it today. We didn't know that's what we were doing at the time. And we created maps, and we created some of the history and some of the pieces of the world. When the video game fell on its face, we thought, okay, let's bring back Walking Down a Hall board game version. And to do that, we'll need some starter stories so you don't spend an hour figuring out who your character is. So I went off to write a couple starter stories. One was about a young kid named Zodak, and it was going to be 10 pages.
And I never heard 100 pages.
At 100 pages, I thought, gosh, I might be writing a book. So I did not grow up longing to be a writer. It just sort of happened through this creative exercise that Eli and I were engaged in.
You know, it's funny, the number of people, including myself, that have started writing a short story and ended up writing a book is long and notable. Among them, some of the biggest and best writers out there, I think. So you're in good company. So Eli, what is it that you've seen as the biggest thing that has helped give Max the information he needed to build the world out? I mean, you guys have built maps together, and you've got characters you've put together. What is it that you think is the best thing about this world in which Zodak lives?
Yeah, Max is, he said, I never wanted to be a writer. I think I can see that. But he's always been a storyteller. Whether it was just us playing backyard games, he would bring a narrative, there would be challenges, there was obstacle courses. In fact, once he gave me stitches on the top of my head because we were playing some fantasy inspired thing, and he decided there was a giant bat on my head and he was going to hit it with his big plastic axe, which he missed and hit me. And I think it was in, you know, good faith. So
I killed the bat and hit you, just
to right, yeah. So like that part of it is very natural to me as I kind of look on and go write a 10 page starter story. Like I said, I never saw him again. And it's been really fun to watch. I think, he brings like vision and structure and this real natural sense of plot and, believable drama to his stories. And I see that partly because I feel I'm pretty weak at that. Like he would talk about going on long drives and just like planning out the story and seeing it happen. And like, I have personally, I have zero until my fingers start moving on the keyboard or typewriter. And then so I have a very different kind of approach. So I think one of the strengths is that it's very believable somehow for being a fantasy. It's because it's very authentic. And I think he really loves his characters and he loves their stories and he's really invested in them. And that comes through.
Very cool. So as Jamie said, it's kind of rare for us to be talking to authors who split the workload, I guess, in the way the two of you had.
Yeah, 50-50, you know, right, Max?
50-50, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to get down into the percentages.
No, we don't have percentages.
But the idea that there's someone, you know, that maybe, I'm not even sure primarily, but the bottom line is you're building a world together, the two of you, maybe 50-50, maybe 70-30, whatever. But one of you is then creating world or stories in that world. And so, you know, Jamie and I have done shared worlds before. We've written in shared worlds. Other people have created. I've created worlds and invited authors into that space, but never the way that the two of you have kind of come up with this, and the fact that you've done it that way is really interesting. So can you describe, and we haven't even talked about the world. Let's back up. Let's describe for the listeners, what is the world that we're talking about that your book is set in?
Sure. It's a world called Yidwien, and it's a second world kind of high fantasy, low magic setting. Again, we started as kids, so you'll see inspiration from Tolkien and, you know, some of the fantasy we grew up with, and fairy tale things. So there's no complicated magic system per se, but there's magic in relics, in nature. There's mysterious kind of dimensions. They're not your classic sort of mages and wizards that way. But it's this mysterious and intended to be fairly grand landscape, the world of Yidwien.
I think part of that is because when we set about really creating the world and naming it, it all came in a big season when Max was a young professional. I was in college. And part of our motivation was, man, we played this as kids, but part of what slowed it down was that our imaginations were getting big. And so to get the game going would take all the time we had and we sort of feel the edges of what we could come up with in one sitting. And so we really wanted something that matched the scale that we were beginning to imagine. So I think that's part of why the world ended up that way, sort of grand sweeping. And it's actually been, you know, it's so now we're kind of filling it in, which is fun because it needs to be filled in at the scale it is.
Yeah. And to add a little bit to that, it was all exploration as kids. I mean, anything, literally anything would fly when Eli was sort of making up the rules, unless it killed me right away. but otherwise, anything would fly. And one thing the writing has done has brought, and we started doing this a bit as we went, but it has brought some accountability to that exploration process. So I'm writing a trilogy. Putting out book one in April, I've written a prequel novella that takes place same world 200 years earlier than that. And then I'm working on a second novella because I'm planning to release a novella between the trilogy books. And now it all has to be consistent because there are other people we're inviting into our world, which is both exhilarating and a little daunting. And so it's forced us to be a bit more disciplined in our world building than we had to be previously.
So introduce us to Zodak and this first book. What do we know about him? And tell us a little bit about how the book begins.
Sure. So Zodak, The Last Shielder, it's a fantasy book about an orphan named Zodak. He's entrusted with a magic medallion, and he's called by a water sprite into an epic quest to find this mysterious order. And he enters a vast, strange new world as he leaves his small village and discovers a battle is afoot with an ancient evil that's sort of awakening, and he's thrust right into the middle of it. And so he's got to protect this medallion, keep it from falling into the enemy hands as they march in on the city where he finds himself. So again, it's sort of high fantasy, low magic, and it all takes place in the center of Yidwian.
Is it fair to classify it as young adult? Is this like a coming of age story?
That's a great question that has haunted me for months and months. It feels to some like coming of age story. I will say there are a few different POVs. They're not all his. So I describe it as YA crossover. It's not necessarily intended for the young end of the YA spectrum. And I think it appeals to the adult reader as well.
Very cool. Very cool.
I'm curious, Eli, when he talks about the middle of Yidwian, where it starts out, you know, what was it like pushing those boundaries and really building out the world around it?
Actually, it's kind of the opposite. We had the boundaries. Those were the easy part. You just kind of draw a big line. I mean, I remember when we drew our first map and first named it, and I was traveling. I was in Paris. I went to a paper store and was really inspired and got this really nice paper, and it's like I got some nibs, you know, and calligraphy or whatever. It's all the in-between stuff that's giving us a run for our money. So it's just been great. And I think, I don't know, Max, if you feel this way, but it feels like a lot of the writing is in a sense to explore and flesh out the world. It's like, well, you know, we spent a long time. You could probably laugh at our, you know, Adobe Illustrator document of like scale. You know, this is what people who are world building sort of 101, like what's the scale of your world? We never think about scale, like actual miles and, you know, how big is it? Is it the size of Florida or is it the size of Central Asia? Some of that has come as the writing has progressed, just like Max said, and consistency is needed. So I think it's been really fun. One thing, certainly there's been give and take and push and pull, you know, and Max in really pushing the story forward, he's coming up with a lot more content than I have in a while or that I am, you know, regularly. And so we have to share ownership, or we felt early on, it's like, we're either going to share ownership or we'll amicably part ways. And like, I'll do my world, you do your world, if we really couldn't make them fit together. But I think it's fair to say, like, certainly to this point, like the importance of the world to us, like, is that we're personally in it with each other. Like, it's a relational connection. And so it would be a loss for us personally to not share the world. So it's worth making sacrifices, negotiating, you know, are there dragons in the world? And I'm like, dragons, you know, or whatever. And so, yes, I think it's really fun fleshing it out. But it takes a willingness to, you know, open hand and kind of like, negotiating certainly on both sides, but I think that's
are there dragons? Don't bury the lead here.
Your book.
There are no dragons in book one is all I can say.
Okay. Fair enough.
No, but I think to Eli's point, you know, you look at the Tolkien map, for instance, which I was looking at the other day, and it is so abstract. You know, there's a handful of cities on this giant map, and you look at the scale and do some math. So even once you have the outline of the world, and this is to Eli's point about exploring, when I'm writing about a character traveling from here to there, that's like a 2-day trip, and it was supposed to, you know, take 2 hours. So, in Florida or Central, Florida is huge, as it turns out. You zoom in on a map of Florida, like there's so much going on in one state. So that scale has been fun to explore.
It's one of the things that makes, I think, this type of epic fantasy fun is filling in the map, because, you know, you start, I mean, look at Tolkien, for example, you start in the Shire, you know, and it's so homey and fun and family and, you know, warm, and everybody can identify with it. And then it's just the adventure of finding all of the amazing things that are out there, filling in the blanks, as it were. What's that been like for you, Max, to fill in those blanks? Because like you said, it's a 2-day journey. Well, a lot happens in 2 days.
Yeah, it's been fun and a challenge. And part of it is the different regions of the world. So the novella I'm working on now, the first one, the prequel, was essentially the same geography 200 years earlier, which is a different type of morphing and changing. It's a little bit more political, Game of Thrones feel to it. The one I'm working on now is a separate city that we haven't really seen or spent any time in over the mountains, and it has its own backstory and sort of a separated people. So one interesting exercise we did recently, it's coming out on an audiobook as well on the 9th, and we've got a great narrator who makes this all possible. But the question was, well, how do people sound from the different parts of the map? And you don't have to think about that when you're writing a book. Like, people can make them sound however they want. You'd say, you know, he's got a raspy voice, and they fill in the rest as a reader. But as an audiobook narrator, particularly one who can distinguish between Irish brogue and, you know, Cork and Dublin, and, you know, that's just in Ireland, and here's what a Welsh sounds, here's the, you know, the High British, whatever. We had all these options. So Eli and I created a dialects map that overlaid over our world map, and we had a call with a
dialects, a dialects for narrator, not dialects of like the languages in the world. This was just for the, like, the actual, you know, narrator, how he sounds. It's like very meta, a very different kind of layer I didn't expect to ever have to think about.
That's right. Yeah. So there is no, we haven't created separate languages. Thank goodness. That would, might be a bridge too far, but yeah, to Eli's point, there are a bunch of people sitting around a table from different parts of the world. Wouldn't it be fun if they didn't all sound the same? And if not, okay, how do they sound?
So for those listening, can't see, Eli is literally like doing the
your hands.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, oh yes, but maybe we should create languages.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Don't get him started. Don't give him any ideas.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about this world. Who what are the challenges Zodak is facing? Who's the villain? Who's the big bad? Is it an organization? Is it a person? Environmental? What are we talking about?
Yeah. The evil that's awakening, according to legend, is named the Ice King. And he has been in remission, underground, out of the way for many, many years. If you look to the chronology, and there's some call outs to this in other books and other places, he has not been in bodily form. And you see hints that that may be changing. And it starts early in the book where you catch some of these hints. One thing that I did in Zodak fairly intentionally was, while you understand he is in a different world, it all starts in a fairly recognizable place. So it's a rural village. There's not a lot of fantastical elements. And then as it progresses, it sort of peels back the onion on what this world is like. And so as a reader, you go on a journey with Zodak to discover good and bad, but that there are all, there's these other races out there that the school kids all just make fun of you because you've got an overactive imagination. Turns out they're real. And these, you know, legends of ancient powers that are at play in the world start to reveal themselves. And so that's what he stumbles into and discovers along the way.
And you said there were other points of view. Does he have clearly allies? Are we talking like a Fellowship of the Ring here? He's got found family. What are the characters are going to be represented in the book?
Sure. So there is a found family element here. He starts off in an exceedingly toxic family environment, and one of the point of views is actually his. She's his cousin in this family. He's adopted by his aunt and uncle. She takes on one of the points of view later in the story. And then as he travels to a giant city and meets people in this order, in this special cast, some of them will begin to take on bigger roles in the story. So there are other folks that he encounters along the way. And the fun of a trilogy is once you meet some of those main characters, they will take on bigger roles in the subsequent books as well.
You said low magic, but you didn't say no magic. So let's talk a little bit about what kind of magic exists in this world. You know, is there the classic Dungeons and Dragons spellcasters, or is it more of an environmental magic, natural magic that is happening to the characters, but not necessarily manipulated by the characters?
I'd say it's the latter. Eli, you want to weigh in?
Well, I don't have quite all the probably the clearly delineated categories. This is something Max is steeped in at the moment. I think of my grandmother, who was inspiration for a lot of this. She spent every summer of our whole lives in a small cabin in the mountains of North Carolina and was a widow before we were born. So she was just this lovely, you know, kind of robust mountain lady. That's how we knew her, with her hair up in a handkerchief. And she had books on gnomes at her house and was steeped in Norwegian mythology just as a pastime, something she loved. And I was thoroughly convinced through her eyes that there were gnomes in the woods around the house. And it wasn't a big thing, you know, it was fun and it was whimsical. So I think our world inherited that feel of magic, where there is latent magic, inherent possibility, unexpected, fanciful things, and sometimes maybe something overt. So I would say, no, it's not a magic that's usually manipulated. And I really like that distinction. As someone who's spent a little time in anthropology, that is actually what magic is in human cultures. It's an attempt to control the universe. And so that's one category for it. It's some way to control things, the chaos or the dangers or unknowns of life. And I think actually Max and I both appreciate an approach to life and the world where you're not just trying to control things, but there's something deeper, you know, a Lewis kind of deeper magic that is bigger than that. So I don't know quite how to describe that succinctly, but that's my best stab.
That works. I mean, the system, the shared world that I'm in right now, where I'm trying to keep it fairly nebulous. I don't want to nail down into some, D&D role-playing game matrix. I don't want to get that detailed. I want authors to be able to kind of play with that, push the boundaries, and come up with the exceptions, the outliers once in a while. Well, normally this is how it works, but hey, every once in a while, because those exceptions, I think, are one of the things readers enjoy as well. So I think that's, I think for me, that resonates. I totally get why you don't go down that path. I can't believe we're so far into this. I got to ask, are you guys still playing D&D? Is this campaign still going on?
I've never played D&D.
I played for half an hour at my friend's house 35 years ago. The second time I played was last summer when our nephew brought his D&D set to the beach where we had family vacation. So I played lots of other games and played way too many hours of walking down a hall, but funny enough, have not actually played D&D.
So do you still walk down the hall?
We think our kids walking down the hall, yeah.
For sure. They're you know, pretty hardcore dudes and dudettes walking down the hall. You don't want to cross those guys.
and that's another thing we kicked around a little bit was, and we have trialed it on our kids, is a version, not a full-blown board game, but a version of walking down a hall where we systematize a little bit of this, because the ugly flip side to Eli having all the power was Eli having all the power. If we got short with each other or something, I was dead so fast. And then, you know,
pretty
pads were getting ripped up. And yeah, so having some structure is something we've been kicking around with as well. And I will say, you know, for me as an author, the book is a means to an end. I love writing and have discovered that's something that I really enjoy doing. But the ultimate vision would be to create a world people are invested in, and we can put content into, whether it's some of Eli's writings, more books, whether it's a game at some point, but to create this world that people get lost in and we can use as a conduit for some of the creativity. As a quick example of Eli's specific contributions in our world, there's a set of sort of knowledge keepers known as the Baruth monks. And periodically Eli will send me a physical typewriter typed dual-sided sheet of paper with an encyclopedia entry, very dense and very academic, written by the Baruth monks, exploring something in the world, something, you know, tiny detail, a carnivorous moss or something. And it, you know, it's exceedingly academic, but just one of those things. Wouldn't that be fun to, you know, have a library of the encyclopedia entries and
arcane and bizarre. And yeah. And what Max has brought to that is he's really shown me that as we, you know, as we kind of journey into this, as he really goes with writing, it may be fun and that's great. And that counts. It's great, but people won't care like about the world unless there's stories to care about, you know? So he's helped me become sort of a believer in the need. If we're going to invite people into it, like it's the rare person who will accept the invitation into encyclopedia entries alone. Let's put it that way. I'm sure you're out there. And if you're listening, contact me. No. And so that's something I get a lot of fun out of, because from the beginning, it hasn't been driven by we.
Oh, Eli froze.
And yeah, we want to bring smarts to it, and we want about it. So, I thought everyone else froze. So I'll just pause.
I think we're good.
Okay. Yeah. So I value that as an.
Nope. I think we've reached the Zoom
thing, but also as a kind of there's a balance there of. Yeah.
It cut out again, Eli. That's all right. I'll clip and put that together so that it makes sense.
No worries.
But
so, you know, so what? Yeah, I could just tack on to what Eli was saying is that the other thing is, for an author, and you can both appreciate this, it's wonderful to have pre-made content, you know, to have something you can pull on. So Eli created the Pudge, which is sort of a hanging giant cocoon of plant, animal, some living thing that emits sound waves. And if you get too close to it, the sound waves are so intense that can melt your brain, like that level of, and it's just this strange artifact of the world that gets worked into my story. I mean, he wrote it years ago and I thought, oh, that'd be fun. So one of the characters is referencing the Pudge in the Midlish Chift Ravine. So that's the kind of stuff for a writer. It's really fun to just have some of those world building details to pull in.
Very cool. Well, we have just about wrapped up here, but we do have one more section of the podcast we need to get to. We call it our No Wrong Answers section of the podcast. We're going to hit you with five rapid fire questions, and there are literally no wrong answers. I mean, you can just pop in whatever that comes off the top of your head, and we'd like both of you to answer. We'll have Eli go first and then Max on each question, but you know, answer and quickly with whatever pops into your head. And I'll let Scott go first.
Okay. First question, early riser or night owl?
In reality or in aspiration? I definitely prefer early rising.
100% early riser for me. All my writing happens when it's dark outside.
Awesome. So when you're traveling by air, window or aisle seat?
Oh, window forever. Clouds, inspiration.
I was like that as a child too. Now I like the aisle. I like the access, and my bad knee likes it too.
Well, that's good, because now you have a seat between the two of you.
Perfect. Oh, right.
All right, next question. Favorite TV or movie character?
The Agra from Dark Crystal. She is one of my personal inspirations.
Beautiful. I was going to go in the Mad Mardigan direction from Willow.
Oh,
such a good character.
Yeah.
Both very recent movies.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. 100%. I think classics are the way to go with that. Great. So cake or pie?
Oh, well, if you'd met my wife, everyone's answer would be pie, particularly apple or pumpkin.
I don't discriminate, but I'll go with pie too. We just had pie day here. And, it's my daughter's birthday, so we'll say pie.
Fair enough. Okay. Last, but maybe the hardest question. Who is your favorite author?
I really love C.S. Lewis. I, on many levels, probably especially because I have a whole range of kids from a lot of age ranges right now, teens down to little, and he really awakens wonder.
Ooh, that's a good one. And maybe the one I would have said if you hadn't said it. I'll go with his compatriot and Tolkien, And yeah, just so inspirational for me as a kid.
Both good answers. Did you want to say something, Jamie?
No, I'm good. I think that was a great version of no wrong answers. There were no wrong answers there. So you're keeping the streak alive. So that's good.
Yep. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to both of you. I know that the first book in the trilogy is not out, but it is available for pre-order. Where can readers find out more about the book and about the two of you?
That's right. So the book will be available all over Amazon and other booksellers. It's also going to come out in audiobook on Audible. And the ebook is Kindle Unlimited. All the stuff can be found at maxmoyerwrites.com, which is my website. Eli and I have a collaborative website, mindseye.site. This is the world of Mind's Eye we've been creating. It right now forwards to my website, but one day it will forward somewhere else.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Real pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Scott, Jamie, thanks so much.
I had so much fun talking with Max and Eli. I mean, the dynamic between the two brothers is, you know, it's clear they care deeply about each other, but also have that opportunity and ability to riff off of each other's conversations and share this world in a very deep way.
It clearly, and it doesn't always go that way. We creatives can be sometimes, I don't know, prickly, I guess, about our creations, and we don't always take feedback well. And so for them to be able to find a way to collaborate and co-create and work through those issues, and they talk about, will there be dragons? Will it not be dragons? You know, and you know, Eli, I think, was leaning towards the no dragon team, and I think Max was definitely leaning towards the dragon team, and sounds like they were able to come to some resolution. That's a very, you know, challenging creative process they have, but it's clearly working. World sounds amazing. The story sounds amazing, and I wish the best of them both of them the best of luck.
Yeah, and I'm excited to take a look at this story myself. We'll have links to Max and Eli's website and everything we talked about in the show notes. That'll be available for you over at jamiedavisbooks.com. And there's a link to the podcast right there at the top of the page, or if you're on a mobile device in the drop-down menu. And so you can definitely check out all of that information over there. Scott, why don't you share with the listeners how they can get in touch with you and follow what you're up to?
Yeah, my website is scottiswriting.com, and I am Scott Is Writing on all the major social media platforms. How about you, sir?
Well, you can check out my community over at the Ream site. You can link up with me there and read two free short stories. You can also, if you want to subscribe to the platform in my least lowest level there, you can actually get my latest book early, which is Unlikely Guardian. That's now available to the foundling levels and above. And so check that out. You can take the shortcut by going to jamiedavisbooks.com/family. Until next time, I'm Jamie Davis.
And I'm Scott Walker, and we are asking you to keep on reading and keep on listening right here to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast.